passport, check. Euros, check. Train ticket, check.
Oh no, I forgot the Flight Free podcast.
Check in with the Flight Free podcast. Imagine where we can take you. Don't forget to carry us in your pocket for destination inspiration.
Hello and welcome to the Flight Free podcast. I'm Evie.
And I'm Lil.
In this episode, we're going to be talking about climate fiction and the recent film Don't Look Up. A bit later on, we'll hear from filmmaker Franny Armstrong and climate scientist Peter Kalmus, who will be sharing their experiences of climate action and talking about how telling stories through film can help inspire people about the climate crisis. But first, let's discuss the film. Have you seen it, Lou? And what did you think?
Yeah, I've seen it. I thought it was brilliant. I think as well, like, it's such a good conversation starter. Like, I've had so many conversations with people about it. And then you can slip in like climate change into the conversation without feeling like preachy or anything. And it was really relatable. Did you find that?
Yeah, so for me, I'd read a lot of reviews before I watched it, so I wasn't sure what to expect because it was quite mixed. And a lot of the reviews were saying that it's quite heavy-handed in terms of like the comedy and the satire. So then when I actually came to watch it, I was so surprised by how much I actually really enjoyed it.
It was funny. It was funny, but it was terrifying as well.
Yeah, 100%. It hit very close to home. I was watching it thinking this could actually happen.
Yeah. Even down to like Ariana Grande in it, I was like, that's like, it's not even like a stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, the scene where they have her on the TV show and then they have the climate scientist after, and everyone is far more interested in her getting back together with the ex-boyfriend compared to being like, this comet is going to hit Earth. And yeah, definitely that kind of social media obsession, and also the media trying to sort of twist the news so it always has to be positive. It can't be the truth ultimately. And you just feel the frustrations of Leonardo DiCaprio's character and Jennifer Lawrence, and the moments where they both just explode were just brilliant.
Yeah, they were definitely some of my favorite moments. Like Kate, Jennifer's character Kate, she explodes on the TV show, and then she's just branded as this crazy female shouty lady. They don't listen to anything she says, and it's like, we all want to shout like that sometimes.
I think it's interesting that so Randall, Leonardo DiCaprio's character, tries to play it in a different way. So he tries to kind of change it from the inside and kind of gets lost on his way, and then he eventually has the exact same moment as Kate Diabaski of just screaming like, why don't you understand this, can't you see what we're doing? And I think that was just acted so well, and it was quite like a long sequence. They really let him go for it, and I was there like, yes, you tell them. But then the frustration that they still do not listen to him.
Yeah, I agree. He really tried to be different, and even like the media tried to shape him differently, like as, oh, he's quite like this attractive man talking about climate change, like he makes it cool. But then eventually he did. He just had the same snap, didn't he?
Yeah, and I think that's what it does well, that kind of building the frustration. And I think that's where a lot of the climate scientists who have watched the film and loved it really appreciated the film, because they really saw themselves in that.
I wonder how it hit people who have sort of been denying climate change, or at least ignoring it because it seems like a bit of an inconvenience. I wonder how that film hit them, and whether it sparked any conversations, whether it maybe has changed people's opinions, whether that sort of element of fear that it does have has hit home with anyone.
Before we hear from our guests, let's have the Flight Free Fact.
Flight Free Fact.
So to illustrate this episode, we wanted to find some stats on how many films there are about climate and how many there are about flight and flying. It's pretty hard to find, but anecdotally, since 2000, we can find 9 high-profile films whose storyline revolves around planes, including The Terminal and Sully, both starring Tom Hanks, This number doesn't include any war films, which usually heavily feature planes, or any films that use flights in passing. These are just the ones where the main focus is the plane. Over the same period, we found just two about climate. Avatar, 2009, which is about the destruction of the natural world because of man's pursuit of the hilariously named mineral unobtainium, and The Day After Tomorrow from 2004, which stars Dennis Quaid as a paleoclimatologist who tries to warn the world about human-induced global warming and is laughed at. There are quite a few documentaries like Before the Flood and The 11th Hour, both starring Leonardo DiCaprio, and of course Al Gore's An Inconvenient Truth. But it seems that climate is often sidelined to documentaries or mockumentaries rather than the mainstream. Don't Look Up is the first film we can find that is entirely fictional and uses climate action, or lack of it, as its main theme.
Okay, so it's time to hear from our guests. We're really pleased to welcome Peter Kalmus and Franny Armstrong to our podcast. Peter is a climate scientist at NASA and the author of Being the Change, Live Well and Spark a Climate Revolution. Franny is a British documentary film director whose films include The Age of Stupid, McLibel and Drowned Out.
The first question that we put to Peter and Franny was, is there a particular film that has inspired you?
When I was living in London, I used to go and see loads of films, probably two or something a week, and go to documentary festivals and things like that. But the film I really remember as a big moment was Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11. And I went to a screening in London, and it was like going to a rock concert, because he pulls up in this massive, this massive car, and there's all these people on the streets, and there's people holding back. And then he comes in, everybody's on their feet cheering. It's like, this is more like a rock show, you know. And he was just so, you know, maverick and independent. And what he was saying was obviously all in the film was obviously all factual. But it just had such a wicked energy. And that was a big moment.
You know, I think one of the things I learned from Inconvenient Truth was you have to talk about solutions that are at a commensurate scale to the problem. I remember just the feeling of whiplash after, you know, sitting through this basically lecture about how terrifying climate change was. And then for the kind of last frame to be now go change your light bulbs, just didn't sit very well with me at that time. But yeah, it was one of the, you know, in some ways, I think I was late to the party in terms of understanding how serious climate change was. I was a physics grad student at the time at Columbia and hadn't really been thinking that much about climate change. And, you know, that his movie got me reading papers and learning the science. And that sort of set me on this track, which eventually led me to shift from being an astrophysicist to being a climate scientist.
So here Peter says that Inconvenient Truth was a film that inspired him. And it's actually really interesting because Leonardo DiCaprio was also inspired by this same film. So Leonardo was inspired when he watched this film. And then after meeting with Al Gore, he went on to produce and narrate Before the Flood, which was a climate change film in 2016. And I think that's really when he started being inspired by how can he use like his massive, massive platform that he has and to do what he can for the environment and for the climate.
So in Don't Look Up, Leo plays the character of a climate scientist, and we asked Peter how it felt to watch himself being played out on screen by Leo DiCaprio. But he actually said he felt more affinity with the character of Kate.
So Kate Diabaski is his grad student, and she's the one who's just, you know, you can see her struggling throughout the film with her urge to basically just get up on her roof and start screaming. And she literally does it in the films, you know, that this is an emergency, you know, we're all going to die if we don't do something about this. And, you know, some part of her knows that that's not the most skillful way to reach people, but she has such a strong emotional reaction and so much frustration at the kind of the complete lack of response of all of the people around her, that I really felt a lot of affinity. You know, I felt a kindredness with that conundrum that she faces, because that's how I feel. I'm constantly trying to rein myself in so that I don't just get completely sidelined and ignored by screaming at everyone all the time. But that's how I feel. It's this serious. And it's just been surreal and extremely challenging to me emotionally to know this and to basically, you know, be ignored and to be ridiculed often by people who don't understand the science as well, and to kind of see an action from world leaders, and that we're collectively just still careening rapidly in the wrong direction towards this catastrophic peril toward our whole civilization. Sometimes I can't go to sleep at night because I feel something about the irreversibility of what we're doing to the Earth system, the fact that we can't undo it, that we're kind of born into this incredibly beautiful cosmic oasis, this wondrous web of life, this pale blue dot spinning through the cold void of space. It's just marvelous. To me, life is the most wonderful thing you can imagine. And I feel so much gratitude to be able to have this time here on this amazing Earth, and to know that we're permanently taking that down, and we're destroying so much of life on Earth, and we're setting up this kind of horrendous future for our young people today and future generations. And it all seems completely unnecessary to me. Yeah, it's extremely surreal and challenging to be living that every day. I the film was incredibly emotionally resonant for me and cathartic, because I've been, I didn't even really realize it, but I've been waiting for a film like that for so long. Hopefully a lot of the years of being gaslighted and feeling like a Cassandra are starting to be in the past now.
I just felt so emotional listening to Peter talking there. I just thought it was so powerful. The description he gives, especially of Earth being this kind of small blue dot floating around the universe, and how he moves on to talking about how grateful he feels to have life. And even though, at points he was sort of pulling at his hair, you could feel his frustration. You also felt there was a sense of hopefulness ultimately that we could come together, we could do something, but that people need to take action and it needs to happen soon. I can completely sympathize with him not being able to sleep, but then moving on to feel like, the time is now to do something about it and that we can make a difference.
Yeah. It's like that challenge of like, how can you feel? You can fear things, but how can you turn that fear into hope and action? And like the challenge with films like this is to actually inspire people to actually go and then take that action. And the director of the film, Adam McKay, said in an interview, there's no one movie that will change everyone's minds, but we're heartened by the response. But it's still just a movie, and what we need is for everyone to understand the urgency. And Franny felt the same about her film, The Age of Stupid, which actually did lead people to take an action. The film stars Pete Postlethwaite as a man looking back from the future and asking, why didn't we save ourselves when we had the chance? It's kind of a documentary that tells the stories of various people across the world and their responses to climate change. It's really powerful. So let's hear from Franny about what happened after the film came out.
Well, when we were making Age of Stupid, speaking for myself, I was thinking, I'm spending 5 years on this. This is my contribution to the fight against climate change. And when it's done, I am then going to, do whatever I want to do and basically get a life and, do whatever. Retire from filmmaking and retire from climate change. And then when we finished the film and we started showing it to people and stuff like that, everybody said the same thing, which is, what can I do about climate change? And then it slowly dawned on me that actually this is the beginning. Making the film was the start. And then we must do an impact campaign, because we could see how powerful the film was from these early screenings. I mean, there's stuff on YouTube of interviews of people coming out of those screenings crying their eyes out. It was really, really powerful, including Caroline Lucas saying that it's really changed things for her. And anyway, so then we were like, oh, okay, we're going to have to do an impact campaign. And anyway, eventually came up with the idea for 10-10, which was the campaign that we ran with The Guardian, asking everybody to cut their emissions by 10% in 2010. And it took off massively, as in a third of the local councils, all the government, 1,000 schools, London Zoo, Royal Opera House, all these celebrities, they all came on board to cut their emissions by 10%. So that was a fantastic achievement. And in fact, that campaign is still going today, 12 years later, although it's changed its name. It's now called Possible.
Personally, I think it's pretty amazing that this campaign is still running to this day. And you see, you know, a decade on and more from the film being released, it's still having an impact now. And I just wish that there would be more climate stories that come in the mainstream, and that from each of those films, people will take action, because that's what it needs. I feel like we need a global response, but there's so many different things that come, that need to come together for there to be that positive change. And I think that's where we need more of those films to tackle, you know, all the different topics that come under climate change.
Yeah, we need to see how it can go from just being like a form of entertainment to then being something that we can take action from.
Let's get back to Peter and Franny and hear what they have to say about getting more climate related stories into the mainstream.
I think that I want to see a lot more storytelling, for sure. Like, we resonate by stories, and we collectively organize via stories. And what I think one of the things that's been a cause for the sort of frustratingly slow rise of the climate movement is a lack of good stories. And there's not solidarity in our movement. There's a lot of infighting. There's a lot of disagreement. It's really hard to get people, climate activists even, to simply focus on the number one cause of what's doing this to our planet, which is the fossil fuel industry. Like, we can't even really coalesce around the need to end the fossil fuel industry within our movement. And I really think that there's been this struggle over the years to find the resonant stories. And it's a completely non-trivial thing to create those good stories. And, you know, it's a skill, like someone who plays a sport really, really well. You know, there's some people that are extremely good at telling stories, and they've, up until now, you know, they've been largely silent about climate breakdown. I think part of it is that just such a small fraction of people really understood the urgency. That's part of it. I think part of it is that there's a fear that, you know, if you're working for a company like Pixar, that a genuine climate story might not sell, might not be something that kids would want to watch, for example. But for whatever reason, we've been lacking in those stories, and I think we need them. And I really hope to see a lot more world-class climate stories being told in the mainstream in the near future, and exploring, it's a infinitely multifaceted problem. There's infinitely many stories. I think there's probably a few archetypal stories, of which Don't Look Up kind of represents one. But I think there's so many characters to explore.
It's funny, because I've just done another film about river pollution in the UK. And we did it last, we actually did it as a live documentary, because I don't know about you, but I'm totally bored of the, not bored, I cannot take any more of the doom climate films. You know, even though they're all brilliantly made, and they're all saying really, really important things, I just can't take it. I'm just so exhausted and demoralized by what we've done to the planet that I need to be different. And so we came up with this idea to do what we called a live documentary. So using new technology, the live streaming, all shot on mobile phones. And I spoke to George Monbiot, the environmental journalist, and said, you know, if we did a live documentary, would you do it with us? And he said straight away, it should be river pollution. This is less than a year ago we're talking about. And we did it in July, this live documentary, which was one of the most terrifying things I've ever done. George says he still has nightmares about it, because it was so stressful. It was unbelievably stressful. It was like doing a sort of live film and a live theatre show, but knowing there's all these thousands of people watching all around the world. Oh my God, it's so difficult. But we and other river campaigners have taken river pollution from an orphan issue, as George calls it, you know, one that was not talked about a year ago, except in, you know, small environmental circles, to front page of every newspaper. And and it talked about in House of Commons and talked about everywhere. And there's new investigation from the Environment Agency happening. And so basically it was like, okay, films can still change the world, because, you know, that was a very fast, less than a year now, but that was a new format, and the new format really, really helped, I think, from my own perspective, but also other people have said the same thing, which is, it wasn't just another doom, we're all doomed and we're all awful. It was, we're going to watch George, who's somebody I know, not me, somebody the viewer knows, in this ridiculous situation, kayaking, trying not to fall in, crashing into things, speaking at the same time, trying to make this live documentary. So there was this added element of jeopardy for the film itself and for George that just gave it a completely different feeling. So, but really just trying to do environmental filmmaking in a different way in order to reach people.
It's so amazing that Franny's work's being discussed by politicians. Like, I think the danger, though, with a buzz around the film, like An Inconvenient Truth and Don't Look Up, is that once that buzz passes, like, things sort of get forgotten, and we need these issues to always be in the mainstream.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think one of the benefits of storytelling and filmmaking is that you can make something entertaining and get it in front of an audience who wouldn't ordinarily hear that message. And I think that's especially true with Don't Look Up, and also the fact that they have such a star-studded cast, that's definitely going to draw in a huge audience. And I thought the film was really funny, and it's supposed to be entertaining. That is the point. And at Flight for UK's end of year party last year, we had the comedian Matt Winning, who does stand up about climate. And, you know, initially you'd think, how do you make climate change funny? But actually it opens up the topic to a new audience, because they go for the comedy but get taught about climate change. So let's hear what Franny and Peter had to say about that.
I think there's a lot to be said for humour, and for, I mean, there's people doing research into this as to how our brains work, and that if you're laughing at the point at which you're laughing, or just after you've laughed, you're more likely to take on board a point that is counter to what you currently believe. You're more able to, like, move your own thinking along, apparently. But I think whether that's actually true, I think it certainly rings true for me. And that's why we've made two climate comedies now, as we call them, like satires, similar to Don't Look Up in spirit. We're just trying to communicate climate change in a different way, yeah. And with the comedian Jonathan Pye, who's very, he's a YouTube superstar. And so he and I wrote these two pieces, one at COP26, and both of which were really, really successful in terms of millions of views. We were even in the YouTube top 10, which is, I've never been in the YouTube top 10 before. Anyway, so I'm trying to do a whole series now of climate comedies. We'll see if it comes off. Perhaps after the success of Don't Look Up, I might be more able to get it funded.
I think that, you know, I'd love to see some research on this. There must be some out there, and hopefully there will be more. But my feeling is that comedy is kind of like a side door into people's brains. So they put up all these defenses to keep the emotional reality out, which is a form of denial. Even if they're reading the science and they're not, like, saying the science is wrong, they still might not be willing to go through the stages of grief that you I think probably we've all gone through, and a lot of climate activists have gone through. You know, there's something about, I definitely need to go through the different stages of grief to get to the far side and to start doing everything I could do. Like, there's a lot of emotional work that had to happen first, which isn't fun or easy. And so I think there's barriers that go up in people's brains. You know, they cherry pick information, not just science, but also kind of emotional information. And somehow comedy is like I think it's a very good thing, but it can kind of get in behind all that stuff and kind of break through it and help people kind of realign those different parts of their brains and maybe start, you know, aligning their beliefs and their actions with the actual sort of factual beliefs that they hold. So yeah, I don't know exactly how that works on a psychological level, but it makes a lot of sense to me intuitively. You can't fix a problem if you don't accept that there's a problem. You can't even see that there's a problem. And there's a lot of forms of denial, but the most insidious one is this collective denial that we're in as a society, where we're just, again, moving literally 180 degrees in the wrong direction. So, you know, I wish it's already 2022, and I wish that we'd gotten to this point of accepting that we're in an emergency in the mainstream. You know, there've been, you know, my heart goes out to the climate activists who have shed their blissful ignorance even before I did and have been living in this sort of horror show for even longer of kind of walking around with this knowledge while everyone around them laughing at them and ignoring them. But, you know, here we are in 2022, and at least we've at some level taken that step now through this film. And it's, you know, the fact that it was wildly successful, you couldn't have predicted that before it happened, I don't think. You know, a lot of artists have been trying to break through like that for such a long time. And something about the timing and something about the way the film was set up and the way it had all the, you know, the star power to kind of like to get the initial views. And then the way that, like, really, I think close to 100% of climate scientists just absolutely loved it and rallied around it and kind of defended it from the critics who are, in my opinion, frankly, in denial. You know, a lot of these very serious people who kind of control the narrative, who sit in these comfortable positions, who have a lot of money, kind of control the power and control the media, control the politics, et cetera, control the capital. They are very invested in not changing the status quo. And they're very invested in not accepting that there's a huge problem with the status quo. And I think a lot that was playing out a lot in the sort of like, you know, big establishment critiques of the film. So I'm very grateful, even though those figures tried their best to quench it, that it still broke through in a huge way. I think it's probably on track to be Netflix's most successful movie of all time. And it's a climate film. That's amazing. And to go back to some of what Franny was saying, there's so many climate stories to be told. You know, Don't Look Up was not a story of how we get out of this, but that's okay, because it was a story of where we are. And it woke a lot of people up. It got a lot of people to look up. And that was critically important. And maybe it'll lead to more climate stories that talk about solutions, that talk about solidarity, that allow us to start to feel what it would, you know, what it would be like if society does shift into emergency mode.
Wow, that was so inspiring to hear from both Franny and Peter. So our biggest thanks to them for sharing their time and insights with us. If you want to find out more about Franny's films, you can do so through the website spannerfilms.net. And to hear more from Peter, he's at Climate Human on Twitter.
Now, on to Destination of the Month.
Destination of the Month.
Every month, we recommend somewhere for you to visit. It could be here in the UK, or it could be somewhere a bit further afield. But the crucial thing is, you can, of course, get there without flying.
So given that the message of the film Don't Look Up is that we do want you to look up, we've picked a dark sky location where you can look up and see some amazing stars. Dark sky sites are areas where your view of the night sky is unobstructed by light pollution or other unnatural light sources. And of the 18 international dark sky reserves in the world, the UK is home to 7. Our top destination is Kildare and Forest Park, officially the darkest place in England, located in the northeast. With 250 square miles of stunning woodland, this really is a fantastic place to get away from the smog and gaze up at the stars above.
And that brings us to the end of this month's podcast. Thanks again to our fantastic guests, Franny Armstrong and Peter Kalmus, and thanks to you for listening.
Next month, we're going to be talking to Sammy Grover about being an eco-hypocrite and exploring if our individual actions can lead to system change. Please do join us again if you can. Goodbye.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed your journey with the Flight Free podcast. Download the full series on the podcast page of our website and join us again next month for more inspirational stories and grounded adventures. You can find more information and inspiration at flightfree.co.uk.
Until next time, stay safe and stay grounded.